Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Seven boats are circling above me. They're getting so upset. They're hungry for some fresh meat, but I ain't dead yet. Yes, I'm getting mighty, mighty weary. I'll get up and go done get. But I got lots of fight left. No, I ain't dead yet.
Yeah.
That old sun is way up high. It's in the sky.
All people should know what that is.
That is a hot Texas swing band.
That is a great tune. That was just a fun tune.
There's still seven boats are circled in above me. They're getting so upset. They'll have to find death somewhere else, because I ain't dead yet.
Okay. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, and I am in my little, tiny little studio here in Star, Idaho, on the phone with my co-host and beautiful person and this wonderful, vivacious woman, Bobby Jean Bell in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I'm here. I ain't dead yet.
Okay, me neither. Me neither.
Yes.
And of course, we are coming to you live right here on LA Talk Radio, out to the world. So if you have people that want to listen, and you know what, we know you guys are locked up, and we really appreciate it, because I know you all have something else you'd rather be doing, or I'm just tired of doing it, like tired of binge watching Bosch. Mm-hmm. Or what are the other things?
You know what? I just started watching Bosch.
Isn't that great?
Oh my gosh, it's great.
And I mean, you know, you have other options. And we really do appreciate you joining us here on Thursday nights on LA Talk Radio, because we try to bring you some of the best authors in the United States and indeed in the world. We have them all from all over the world. So we hope that things are going to get back to fairly normal fairly soon. But until then, please keep tuning in on Thursday nights. 7 p.m. Pacific for LA Talk Radio's The Writer's Block, because we'll be here, not necessarily entertaining, but sure putting a bug in your ear. Okay, Bobby,
Yeah. Thank
you so much for those masks you sent us. They were absolutely wonderful.
And they are reversible. Did you notice that?
I looked at them briefly. I did not notice that they were reversible, but now I'm going to have to look.
Well, I was trying to figure out for you and Jerry, you know, like what would you be, what patterns would you be comfortable wearing?
Paisley is always good for me. So, I mean, I just hope this country just comes, you know, starts gluing itself back together pretty quick.
And I do too.
This pandemic just starts settling down a little bit. Holy crap.
Well, what I'm hoping is that somehow through it all of our friends that have sparks of creativity, who right. are always challenged with how do I find the time to create, practice, perform, social media, marketing, you know, all the pieces that maybe right now they actually can, you know, can take advantage of this time to really put the metal, you know, pedal to the metal and ramp up their creativity.
Right.
With so many less distractions. I mean, we can find distractions, but you know, we're not getting on our cars and going here and there and willy nilly, you know? No. So, I would hope that maybe our creative friends are figuring out ways to really harness this time.
I actually, have gotten some writing done this last couple of weeks. And it's been great. I mean, you know, I just haven't had time, and I just, you know, I'm so busy doing other stuff.
Yep.
You know, when you're retired, you're never really retired.
No.
And, you know, you wind up doing more than when you were actually working. So.
Right.
But let's get a what? Yes. I'm anxious to bring in our guest tonight, because
you want to get on it.
He's just, not only is he a great writer and just, but he's also a good personal friend of ours.
Yes, he is.
And he's been at the Buckaroo Bookshop together for years, and just, I mean, you know, had him on the show before, and for a writer of nonfiction, the guy is just like awesome. This is his very first fiction book. His name is J.R. Sanders. He's a native of the Midwestern. I think he's from Kansas or someplace around there, and a longtime denizen of the L.A. suburbs. He lives in Southern California with his wife, Rose, and their two different rescue dogs.
And we love Rose, too.
We love Rose, too. She's just the neatest lady. How she puts up with him, I have no idea. And his dogs, Ruby and Marlo. His previous books include Some Gave All, Forgotten Old West Lawmen, and Who Died With Their Boots On, and which was a great read. I actually, we talked about that last time JR was on the show, which was June 18th, 2015. Mm-hmm. So let's just bring in Mr. Sanders right now. Please welcome back to the Writer's Block, Mr. J.R. Sanders.
Hello, Jim. Bobby.
Hey, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
He's back.
It only took me 5 years. I'm back.
Not bad. Not, you know what? That's almost right, too, isn't it?
Well, I think you would have been back sooner, but this book took a little while to get
published. Yeah, I remember the problem.
I'm a slowpoke. What can I say?
I think it was done, wasn't it, JR? And it was out of your hands, and it was sort of in limbo out there.
Kind of a long, sordid story, and probably enough said about that.
Exactly.
Well,
so we were excited,
Mr. Sanders, or actually, should I say, John?
Right.
How you bounced from nonfiction into a fiction role with this book? I am amazed. I actually had ball reading this book, because it was you that wrote it, but mostly because it had old RKO figures in it. And RKO, of course, was the Western Kings of the 30s and 40s and early 50s. They did Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, the Three Musketeers. I don't know.
And on and on.
I mean, you know, so many old West stars. And you kind of highlighted them all in this book, which is kind of cool, which brings back memories. Where did this story come from?
You know, it just kind of started. I wanted to. I've been a member of the Western Writers of America for 10 years now, I guess, 12 years, something like that, and had yet to write a Western novel. I've done nonfiction, done a lot of magazine stuff, but no novels other than a children's book, which I don't really count as a novel. But I didn't want to write the traditional Western novel for my first time out. I wanted to do something a little bit different. And at the same time, I had always wanted to do a traditional detective novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett era, Private Eye, and as I was mulling both of these ideas over, and I'm really too lazy to try and write two books at the same time, I was listening to Dave Stamey music,
Or
buds of Dave Stamey.
Yes.
And he had a song called Cowboy Moon on one of his CDs. If I Had a Horse, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading the liner notes, and it's a cool song anyway. It's got a real bouncy kind of, you know, rhythm to it. And it sounds like one of these old B Western, you know, Gene Autry type songs. And in the liner notes, he mentioned that if he were to score one of those old pictures, you know, this is kind of the song he would write. And I was listening to this music as I was writing, and it just sort of dawned on me that, wow, you know, these B Westerns were being made in the same era as the detective novel that I want to write. So I thought, well, why not combine the two? You know, the movies were being made in Hollywood for the most part, which is, I was going to set my story in LA. So it just kind of grew from that.
Well, you did a good job, I have to say, and I applaud you.
Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It was such a joy to read. Mostly because it flowed really well, and I'm sure Bobby will admit would agree with that.
Well, he had me from like sentence one, and the book is called Stardust Trail. I'm not sure we've said the name of the book, but you know he's in this diner kind of place, and he's overhearing these three young kind of teenage boys, and it's written in the first person, and he gives them names. He doesn't know what their names are, but one's Card Sharp, one's Bat Face, and one's Moon calf, and I thought, oh, you got me. I'm with you.
I like the guy who's leading him around the lot. And he goes, well, mention a lot of his movies and his cowboys, and he's going, no, I don't know. I don't know that. No. And then he's like, well, surely you've heard. Surely you've heard of Stardust Trail. He goes, no.
I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I like that about him, because even today in our own culture, you know, unless we're watching Entertainment Tonight or something, we really don't all know about, you think everybody will know, but you really don't. So I liked
are people who are just not interested in the celebrity culture and the entertainment business.
Right.
Yep. It just doesn't grab them.
No.
And in Nate's case, especially, you know, he's a guy who's kind of living hand to mouth, and as he says in the book, if he didn't go to the movies because it took free time and money, and if you had one, you didn't have the other.
Right.
And yet he's not seedy, you know, like he does live kind of like you were saying, sort of, you know, case to case money wise, but at the same time, he's got class, and he's not the guy working out of a, you know, burned out office with, doesn't have, you know, super digs, but I just really like him. I really like him.
Or in the room behind the kitchen of the Brown Derby, like Stan Wade.
And you created an interesting...
No, and in his case, he's above the kitchen.
Yeah, above the kitchen. And you've created a interesting backstory that you give us a little glimmer, little glimpses into. Will there be more? Is it too early in the conversation to ask you if there'll be more escapades with Nate?
It's not actually at this point. I'm contracted to do two more
Nate
Ross books. And so, you know, you're going to get more into his story, obviously, as things progress, and you'll find out a little bit more about his history and his relationship with his dad and all those things that are kind of touched on in the first book.
Now, Jim, you remember Some Gay Ball. You mentioned it in the intro. And as I was reading this book, there was a situation that happened in the past that becomes important in the storytelling that reminded me, it sort of felt like, I think I know some pieces of this story about a couple of train robbers. So was that story from Some Gay Ball something that followed you into this story?
That was actually the seed of the train robber backstory in Stardust Trail, was this account that I wrote about in Some Gay Ball where
they killed
the U.S. Marshal in Texas was killed.
Right.
And that was actually... that true life account was actually what prompted me to write Some Gay Ball in the first place. I just happened across that story in an old newspaper, a Texas newspaper from the 80s. And it was such a rip roaring, you know, bloodthirsty Western true life story, but I had never heard of it, heard of this guy. So it just got me thinking there must be a lot of these lawmen who were killed in the line of duty, and so they're just sort of buried and forgotten about, and nobody knows their stories today.
Yeah.
And and this was one of them, and so that story has just stayed with me because it was such a fascinating story anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to incorporate that into the backstory of Stardust Trail.
Well, it worked.
That's a good writer lesson. That's a good writer insight. Yeah.
And I love that period. I love the late 30s, late 30s, early for mid 40s. The B Westerns that came out of Republic, yeah, were, I mean, we all knew, because we all saw them when we were kids, but we all knew that they were like hokey. Everybody knew they were hokey. I mean, you know,
that was half the fun.
We couldn't stop watching them.
Yeah.
We just couldn't stop watching them.
Yeah. You know, you had clean. To see the next one.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And the Saturday afternoon serials with the Lone Ranger and Zorro and,
oh my gosh. Gene and Roy and Gabby Hayes.
Gabby Hayes.
Well, and you bring in, I think this is kind of fun too, because you do kind of litter the story with names that we're familiar with, even though they may be sort of very much side characters. But you do introduce John Wayne.
You did. And
tell us a little bit about Nate and the Duke.
Well,
you had to have had a problem with that dialogue. You had to have.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you hear that voice in your head when you're writing. Well, okay, Nate. All right.
Yeah.
You know, the making of Stagecoach was always kind of there in the background of the story of Stardust Trail, because that's what prompts Republic to want to make Stardust Trail, if they want to upstage Stagecoach. So with Stagecoach being kind of a subplot in the book, I sort of felt obligated to have John Wayne make an appearance, but I didn't want it to be just a cheesy, you know, gratuitous walk on, hey, there's John Wayne. I wanted him to be a little more organic to the story. And so in trying to think how to do that, I didn't want him to be a main character, but I wanted him to play some part. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, it just occurred to me one day that he and Nate would have been about the same age at this time in 1938.
Right.
And John Wayne at that point is still just a young, up and coming, mostly unknown actor. You know, the Saturday afternoon.
One of the three Musketeers.
Right.
He was one of the three.
But he's definitely not.
He did 8 of them. Yeah.
But he's not the superstar that he, you know, would go on to be. He's just a working actor.
Right.
And so it occurred to me that these two guys would have been about the same age. And originally, in my earliest draft, I had Nate growing up in Pasadena. And I knew that John Wayne had actually grown up in Glendale, or spent his teenage years in Glendale, had gone to Glendale High School. At the time, it was called Glendale Union High School. So I just thought, why not make these two guys, you know, old high school classmates and buddies? And
you did. It
just kind of went from there, and I had a lot of fun with that whole concept. And it was kind of neat too, I think, to portray John Wayne, you know, a different John Wayne than you would expect, because at this time in mid 1938, he is not a household name. He's just a working actor trying to make it in Hollywood.
Singing Sandy. It.
That's it. Hey, we're going to take a real quick break here, Bobby Jean and JR, and we'll be back with you in a minute. And right now, I'd like to give you a little word about LA Talk Radio. Hey, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com, and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now. Video with J.R. Sanders and Bobby Jean Bell and myself, Jim Christina, and we're talking about, actually, Sunset Trail. Stardust Trail, I'm sorry, with J.R. Sanders, and we're actually speaking about John Wayne at the moment, because he's one of the characters in the book. And, you know, a fun thing about John Wayne is that his son Ethan, said that every time John Wayne played a marshal or a lawman or actually a cowboy, he was playing Wyatt Earp, because Wyatt Earp's the one that taught him how to walk and talk.
Oh. Oh, that's interesting.
So it was amazing that, you know, Ethan even says, you know, my father was more Wyatt Earp than he was John Wayne.
I gotta love that scene in this book where that famous twirling that he does. And
if, over this rifle,
you know, yeah. And it's yeah. always whenever I think stagecoach, you know, yep. And he does, he's, you know, you bring him into a scene where we really need him to do that. And it's just so fun.
It was too good to pass up.
Yeah, because I could just picture it. Okay, so I have to ask you about the mule scene.
Yes, yes, please.
The mule.
The mule.
Okay. Tell us about the, you know, tell us about how that whole idea of taking that mule ride into Vasquez Rocks. Give us a little behind that story.
It just kind of came out of Nate's character. He's sort of a fish out of water.
Yeah.
In this part of the book, because he's a city boy.
Oh.
You know, he did some horseback riding when he was a kid, but he hasn't done any in 20 years, and he didn't really care for it when he did it, and he's certainly not interested in doing any more of it. But all of a sudden, he's thrown into the situation where he's got to go traverse part of the Mojave Desert on muleback, and he's none too happy about it.
Now, yeah. Did you take a mule ride, JR, in order to be able to write his experience, or how did you prepare yourself for that scene?
Well, I have been on a mule before, and I've done some horseback riding, and I'm definitely not an expert in either one. But I remember what it was like, and I remember the difference, and I remember what I thought about it at the time, and was not fond of the mule.
No, actually,
a lot of people are mule people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. The old adage of horse people is never trust a mule.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't trust a mule.
And so, I remember how sore I was. mostly that. I think that's probably my most vivid memory of it.
So fun.
Go ahead, Bobby.
I was just going to ask about writing in the first person, because certainly this could have been written not in the first person. And since it's your first fiction story, talk to us about how you chose to write in that person.
I actually, in the very first draft, when I started into it and did the first couple of chapters, I did it both in first person and third person, just to kind of see, to kind of gauge what I thought was going to work best.
Mm-hmm.
And just with Nate's kind of inner attitude, he's a guy with, you know, definite views and not afraid to make his opinions known. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of played better in the first person. And then going back to the traditional, you know, 1930s, 40s detective story, that was kind of the convention of those stories, was to write them in first person, have it all from the detective's point of view. And it's a tricky thing. It's a different animal, because then you're sort of married to that point of view, and you can't really introduce anything into the story that, you know, wouldn't
right.
come through this person's eyes or viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Well,
so you kind of have to look over his shoulder the whole time.
You actually nailed noir, which is tough to do.
Well, thank you.
And you did a really good job. As a matter of fact, it was somewhat reminiscent of the old noir novels of the 30s and 40s with, of course, Philip Marlowe and all those guys there. So you've done good, JR.
So gentlemen, is it a Western? Is it a mystery? Is it a detective?
It's both.
I think it's kind of got a foot in both camps.
And, yeah, it does. It does.
If anybody asks me, I don't really call it a mystery, because there's no deep dark whodunit involved. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's really more of a whydunit. But it's definitely got Western elements throughout, and sort of Western themes, and Western settings. And so that was kind of my hope in the end product, is that it would be something that would appeal to readers of crime fiction or mystery fiction, you know, especially noir period type stuff, and then Western readers too.
So as you move the series forward, since he wasn't normally hanging out with movie people and not normally, you know, that wasn't, so you're going to stay in the same, are you going to stay in the same time period, or will you move up a couple years?
It's going to move forward a little bit, but not going to take any great leaps. The next one so far I've got set in 1939. So it's, you know, it's really not too long after what goes on in Stardust Trail. The setting will be a little different. You know, it's not going to be the semi-Western story this time around. It'll be a little more conventional, but still not really a Hollywood book either. But, you know, he works in L.A., and you can't really do that kind of job in L.A. without encountering some of the Hollywood element.
Oh, we can't go to L.A. without running into Hollywood people. Just like
no, you can't. You try, but you
try to be. You try to beat them. You know, you go, oh, here comes one. Move.
They're everywhere. Yeah,
they're everywhere. They're like Chicken Man.
It's all around. It's all around you.
You know, actually, I was thinking that in the time period that you've got Nate, you know, stuck, whatever you want to call him, Nate Ross is, you know, stuck in 1938. Had he moved fast enough, he probably could have made private detective for Perry Mason, because that's actually when Earl Stanley Garner started writing Perry Mason's
piece. Speaking of which, have you seen the trailer for that new Perry Mason series that's about
supposed to be on HBO starting in June or something?
No, I haven't.
I'm really interested in it.
Fantastic, yeah. Looks really good.
Yeah, it's supposed to be done like he really wrote the books, not you know, Raymond Burr with a girdle.
No. Yeah, apparently he's more of a private investigator in this series than a.
Yeah, he was a seedy side himself. So I mean, if you've ever read any Earl Stanley Garner, you know that Perry Mason wasn't always right. He wasn't always Mr. Law.
It's a lot more like the original stories.
Right.
It's kind of cool.
Excellent.
So you did a lot of research, I'm sure, to get the flavor of this time period.
I did.
Can you just tell us a little briefly about some of the research that you did?
Sure. And that was where it came in handy, kind of having experience doing nonfiction.
Right.
I read pretty much anything I could get my hands on that dealt with L.A. or especially Hollywood in the 30s, and that dealt with, you know, that period of Western filmmaking. So I read about the Western stars and the day players, you know, the bit players, the stuntmen, biographies of John Wayne, of course, anything I could find about Republic Pictures. And then just oddball stuff, you know, criminal law of the time, you know, California law, a lot of newspaper stories from the period. And then I visited the locations that I wrote about.
Right.
The ones that are still there, still accessible. Looked at a ton of old archival photographs, read, you know, weird sources like road maps and matchbooks and...
What fun.
I know.
Roadmaps really cool. Roadmaps were actually a big help.
Yeah, because it would have been some of the roads we're all familiar with maybe weren't even there yet or were.
Oh, yeah. Or they had different names.
And
slightly different directions, different routes.
Right.
Yeah, I know. Right. One time the San Fernando Valley was nothing but old West towns. I mean, up and down Canoga Park all the way down into like almost Sunland.
Not at all like it is now.
Now it's, hey man.
So a lot of that research would easily move into the next couple of books. I mean, frameworks of highways and restaurant names and all that kind of fun stuff that you immerse us in the time period.
I'll have to do a lot less research for the upcoming books.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you even got into lipstick colors, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I was wondering.
I'm sort of ashamed to know anything about that.
I was wondering, now, how odd is it to have lipstick colors in this book?
The weird things you have to know when you're right.
Yeah. I know, huh? Let's do a little bit of actually, you know what? Let's do another real quick commercial, and then we'll talk a little bit about character development and story development. So right now, Bobby Jean Bell and Jim Bell have got this little store out in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and it's called Out West. And she just shot me some stuff. So let's hear a little bit about Out West.
Once upon a time, there was a man and wife. One day, the man said to his wife, "April is National Poetry Month. How can we celebrate?" And his wife said, "Husband, there's nothing like a pinch of poetry or a great story to brighten the day." And the man said, "We have lots of poet and author friends writing and reciting." And his wife said, "Let's create an entertaining short daily post on Facebook." And the man said, "What shall we call this daily post?" And the voice said, "Name it Your Daily Pinch of Poetry." And the wife said, "Beginning April 1st, I will post on our Facebook pages, Out West Shop, The Writer's Block, and Rendezvous with a Writer. It's as good as done. Find out more about Your Daily Pinch of Poetry at 2 p.m. Mountain Time and shop for great merchandise at outwestshop.com. And the man, his wife, and their customers, fans, and friends live happily ever after, because it's always a great day out west.
And it is always a great day out west. And again, I Bobby Jean and Jim sent Jerry and I some masks. We got them today in the mail. They're so cool. If you need a mask, get a hold of Out West, because they got the neatest masks around. I swear.
Well, thank you so much. We're not in the mask business, but
no, you're not in the mask business, but. You know, I'm sure they can probably find one in a drawer someplace. Okay, that's 7:30 or 8:30, 8:30 Central. And we are on the phone with J.R. Sanders and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell and myself. And we are talking about J.R.'s new book, Stardust Trail, that taken 5 years to get published. And congratulations on that, J.R. I know it's been a labor of like heartburn and whatever, beer sodas and whatever you had to do to get this thing done. I'd like to talk a little bit, switch a little bit of gears here. And this is a subject you and I have never talked about before, because your other stories have been nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Your character development is very good. How did you come up with the characters that you came up with? Nate Ross is a great, great character. And I don't know if you visualized them in your head first or however you did that, but some of these characters are very memorable. And where did you get the idea for Nate or any of the other characters that stand out in this book?
Oh boy. It'd be hard to point to anyone, saying some of it is from experience. I did a little private investigation work in my youth, not as far back as 1938, but
no.
But there were guys along the way that were maybe a little bit like Nate. My dad was about the same age as Nate Ross, and I remember stories that he told me about his youth and, you know, what life was like in that period and how they talked and how they hung out with their friends and what they did for fun and attitudes. And those things just kind of, tumble around in your brain. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to put a character together.
Mm-hmm.
So you just take a little bit here, a little bit there, and before you know it, you've got a character who's kind of doing the work for you. You know, he's putting the words in your mouth rather than the other way around.
I was just going to ask, mm-hmm. did you allow your characters to run the story, or did you tell them what they were going to do?
Well, I started off telling them what they were going to do, but they didn't listen.
Never works,
to me,
does it?
No, they took the reins pretty early on. And, you know, it was all I could do to keep up sometimes.
Well, that and Bobby Jean, I'm sure that if I were to ask you that same question, you would give me the same answer. We have never talked to an author yet that has not said the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, there's three ladies. They perform together, and they're called the Cady sisters. But we learn pretty fast they're not real sisters.
Right.
And you say about them, Madeline, the brassy peroxide job was half in the bag. She looked at me like a junkyard mutt looks at a pork chop. And then a couple sentences later, you say, I looked at the three of them sitting side by side, all class, kindergarten class, and no class. And I thought, okay, I got who these three women are. That's early in the book, page 34. And I thought, as the book goes along, I'm like, yep, that's exactly what these ladies are. And I think they had to be kind of fun. You know, Val and Madeline, I guess, in particular, had to also be kind of fun to write. Because you're writing women. You know, besides the men, you're writing these women. And yeah. How challenging was it to write the women?
Oh, it was, because I don't know anything about women. You know, what man does.
Well, you're a smart one.
you're fortunate that you do have a smart one there. So
the characters, they're all distinctive and we never meet David Prince, but you give us, doesn't he give us David Prince, Jim, just through?
Yes. Oh, totally.
Tell us a little bit about David and how you crafted that character.
He was actually kind of loosely based on a real person. And it was just in some of the research that I had done, there were some newspaper stories about a cameraman, Hollywood cameraman who was murdered in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Found shot outside the Hollywood post office. And it was kind of a mysterious thing. He was sitting in his car and he had been shot, I think, in the back of the head. Mm. But they never, it was an unsolved case. It's unsolved to this day. They never really did figure out who killed him or what really happened. But all this evidence was coming out at the time that he was leading kind of a double life and was kind of a seedy guy and not at all what he appeared to be. And that just kind of stuck with me. And so that was sort of the image that I had in my mind when I was talking about David Prince.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we ask you the question and let's get that out of the way. We asked you this once before. 5 years ago. I don't know if you're going to have the same answer or not. But considering the fact this program is called The Writer's Block, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you work around it?
I have. And, you know, the last time I was on and the last time you asked me that, I think I made some, you know, flip kind of joking remark about it.
I think you did. I think your wife slapped you, too.
Probably. She usually does when I'm being too much of a wise guy. So this time I'll give you a serious answer.
Okay.
Because I've got a little more experience with it now too. I have experience.
You're writing from fiction. Time to time.
But to me, writer's block is really nothing more than kind of a combination of procrastination and fear and doubt. And the way to deal with it really is like you're old enough, Jim, to remember when every public swimming pool had a high dive.
Oh, absolutely!
I think about writer's block like the kid going up on the high dive for the very first time, and you go up there and you walk out to the end of the board, and it's only about 15 feet to the water, but it looks like, you know, 1,000. And you're standing there, and it's a long, long way down, and everybody's looking at you.
And you can't get down off the board.
They're waiting for you to do a belly flop. They're kind of hoping to see you do a belly flop. And at some point, you know, you can't stay there forever. At some point, you've got two choices. You either turn around and climb back down the ladder and forget the whole thing, or you jump.
And you're not going to climb down, so you are going to jump.
Nope. Yeah. And really, that's the way that I've found to get past writer's block is just to jump back into it and before you know it, you're off and running again.
It's a great answer.
It is a good answer. Forgotten.
Yep. Because actually it applies to any, you know, I think right now we're all talking about pushing out our comfort zones a bit. And and I think that's just the similar kind of thing, you know, where you had said to yourself about something in the past, well, I don't know how to do that, or well, I'd like to do that, but, and now you don't maybe have the excuses that you had in the past. And so it's like, okay.
Or the choice.
Yeah. It's like, you know, so that's a really good, thank you for sharing that.
That is a great answer. What advice would you give a brand new writer? Seems though the show is geared towards new writers. What advice would you give to a new writer that's trying to write his very first novel?
Wow. well, first of all, and it's a cliche, I guess, but the first thing I would tell them is don't quit your day job.
Well, yeah.
don't just decide, hey, I'm going to be a writer and this is going to be great.
Right.
Because none of it is as easy as it sounds. There's sort of a misperception, I think, sometimes that because we all learned, you know, penmanship and grammar and, you know, sentence construction and in school, that anybody can write. And
right.
And it's not necessarily true, at least, you know, not in the beginning. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of failure. And if you're afraid of failure, I wouldn't recommend anybody taking up writing, because you're going to fail. It's just part of the process.
Sure, sure.
I read a great quote, and I can't think who it was who said it, but it said that writing, being a writer and not wanting to face rejection, is like being a boxer and not wanting to get punched in the nose.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, it's a great.
It's delusional. It's going to happen.
Right. You made a good point about grammar and sentence structure and all that good stuff when we're in school. And it's kind of like going to basic training and infantry school. And when, you know, you think you know everything. And I got to Vietnam in 1969. And first thing that they said in the recreation yard, when we first go in to get our first meeting, was that everything you learned in school, forget it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
None of it's any good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I believe that because I'm a writer, as you well know, and you use very little of what you learned in your basic English classes as far as sentence structure. And I mean, everybody ends sentences with prepositions. I don't know. I don't know why I try not to, but we all do.
You know. I know. Every time I do it, I curse myself, but I leave it there.
I know.
In emails and things, you know.
Where are you going?
And that's okay, because editors have to eat too.
But most editors don't even mess with that anymore. I think it's so accepted. But you know, I think you're right. It's just leave the grammar at home and tell your story.
Tell your story.
And the other thing I would tell a new prospective writer is that you need to have the need to write. That's a whole different thing than just having the desire.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
You know,
exactly.
There's a lot of people who say, oh, I'd love to write a book. I'd write if I had the time. You know, I'm going to write a book someday. But having that desire is a whole different thing than having that kind of inner need and that drive to do it.
Exactly.
What propels you off the diving board rather than turning around and going down is that need.
It's the only thing that'll keep you going.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because it's a marathon, really.
Yeah.
Oh, I would like to take 1 second here, and I never publicly thanked you. I wrote a book called The Return, and JR did the foreword to it, and it was a wonderful piece of writing, and it was just, I mean, it made my day to read that, and I want to thank you personally.
You're welcome. You're welcome. That was probably one of the most fun projects I ever did. It wasn't a long piece of writing, but it was fun.
No, it was, and actually it lit my day. It's just like, well, like Bobby Jean did the first half of the book, Dark Angel. And, I mean, you know, we all can't sit in our rocking chairs and listen to, you know, your music, but with your wine.
we're like the bookends, JR.
Yeah.
those two books.
You were, and anyway, what do you got in the cooker for going? I mean, I understand you're going to do another Nate Ross novel, but what else?
Working on Nate Ross. I'm also working on a more of a, still not a traditional Western, but a little more in the traditional Western vein. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a book of short stories that are all set. Cool. They're fictional, but they're history based, all set in Dodge City, Kansas from its days as a military outpost through the Buffalo Hunter era, through the cowboy era, and kind of on just beyond that to the point where Dodge started to sort of settle down and civilize and become more of a farm community than the cow town.
Yeah.
That'll be great.
Do you mention the mountains of buffalo bones that they were out in the prairie?
Oh yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. That's what then they started the selling pickers. That. Yeah. Bone meal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
They can't buy a buffalo, so how about buying their bones?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Use it to make china and whitened sugar and fertilizer and all sorts of things.
Everything. So and unfortunately, the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival has been canceled for this year.
We're all bummed about that.
I know. And I'm in Idaho now, and, you know, I wasn't able to make it last year, and I wasn't going to be able to make it this year. So, I kind of feel bad for you guys that making all these plans and not being able to go.
Well, at this point, we're just looking forward to next year.
Well, I'm sure you are. But you guys, Rose came up with a pretty good little option. You want to explain that real quick so our listeners can hear what you got going?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to Bobby.
No,
it's really more her project than mine.
You gave it to me.
basically, we're just through Bobby's page on Facebook, the Rendezvous with a Writer Out West. We're each day featuring a cowboy poet and then a cowboy author, a different one each day, and just posting stuff about their books, their latest books or their current projects or their past work and other stuff that they're doing, and just to sort of acquaint people that maybe, you know, aren't familiar with some of these folks or their work or what they're doing, and give some exposure to people that aren't able to get it through the usual, you know, through the mm-hmm. Cowboy Festival.
Excellent.
Or going out and doing book signings or poetry performances.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, I'm going to take a real quick break here, and then we'll be back for our final little push. Creative Edge is a great, great, great publicity firm, and if you're looking for a publicist, you can't go wrong. So how about a little Creative Edge? You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.services. And if you need a publicist, go there, Creative Edge. And you can't go wrong. Mickey Mickelson's a great guy. And it's creative-edge.services. And hear what he's got to say. So as we roll down to our last couple minutes, you talked about what you got going as far as projects go, the mm-hmm. Cowboy Festival. And so what about, how about your wife, Rose? What does she do? She's teaching from home, is she not?
She is. And, you know, we were talking about having to make changes in the current climate, and it's been a huge change for her because she's had to get up to speed on Zoom and, you know, is only able to interact with her kids now online, two or three times a week. And so it's a whole different animal. You know, she's right. essentially teaching the same material, same sort of structure, but it's a definite change. And her students are seniors. So, you know, that kind of adds an extra element. You got kids that are getting ready to launch, you know, into college. Yeah. So you've got to get them prepared for that.
Yeah.
And the year is winding down. So just, a lot of elements go into making it kind of a complicated thing.
Yeah, I'm sure. I normally wouldn't mention a writer's spouse, but Rose is such an integral part of JR that, I mean, you get JR, you get Rose. That's just the way it is. And, mm-hmm. you know, we absolutely adore Rose. She's just the sweetest, nicest lady. And I have to say that for me, Rose has always been Johnny on the spot when I was at the Cowboy Festival and I needed coffee. She's there and she just said, boom, we're good. Here you go.
We're enjoying working with JR and Rose on this project. And wonderful.
So the one good part of this quarantine thing for me is I get to spend more time with mm-hmm. Rose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
We wish we could spend more time with Rose too, because we talk.
Yeah, I wish you could too. We miss hanging out.
Well, JR, your book available. Of course, it's your book is available at Amazon and all the online booksellers. Is that correct?
Yes.
And it's an ebook as well, and it's Amazon is what, $16.95, and ebook is $5.95.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. You can get it there. You can always contact JR. You want to give him your contact information?
Yeah. My website is very simple, jrsanders.com. And you can find me on Facebook.
There you go.
I have no idea off the top of my head what my address is there, but not hard to find.
We can find you. Yeah. Well, thanks for giving up your evening for us, JR. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And of course, as we said at the top of the show, you're not only a great friend of the show, but you're also a good friend personally. And we just enjoy the hell out of you. So
thank you. Well, I enjoy hanging out with you guys too.
Thanks for joining us. Oh, absolutely. And next time you get your next book, give the bookie a holler and she'll get you booked.
That's a deal.
Okay, then. Thank you again, JR and JR Sanders. And now we have next week, we have a returning author, Stephanie Osborne, one of the better science fiction writers. We had last time she was on, Bobby Jean, you and I absolutely loved her book.
I see that the bookie has just sent me an email with, I think, everything. Yeah, so here it is, waiting for me to get started. Thank you, Jerry.
Yep, and Stephanie was the one that, oh my gosh, she's the one that had that guy in the spacecraft that went shooting out, and bring her back. Yes. And what a great story, and what a great writer, and we're looking forward to having her back with us next week. So, with everything going on, with that being said, for Bobby Jean Bell, Russ Avison, and myself, Jim Christina, of course, all the folks at LA Talk Radio and the Writer's Block, we are out of here.